Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Right, hello and welcome to episode number 144 of the Self-Help Podcast. It'll be Ed Lamb, Sean Orford and our friend Marissa. Hello Marissa, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm great, thank you.
Thanks for coming in. We're going to give you a chance to introduce yourself very shortly
indeed. It's 144 indeed. Gross. What's 144?
A gross?
It's got a name, doesn't it? 144.
I'm not sure if I've heard
The importance of that number, I'm not sure.
I'll check it out. Something to Google later.
Yeah. We're getting close to 3 years, which will be on episode 156.
Should we?
I think we should. Why not? We've only ever done one boozy podcast where we've been drinking during it. We should probably do a bit more.
We need to do it, and it has to be organic champagne.
Of course.
Which is vegan.
Reassuringly, though, don't worry, guys, because everyone's drinking tea right now, and coffee.
Coffee, yeah. Well, a little clue to what we're talking about, nutrition today, and kind of our relationship with food, which Marissa is an expert, because I've seen your credentials. Very impressive. quick note about our website, liveinthepresent.co.uk. You can head there to find out all sorts of things, including all the links from this week's episode, because there's lots of interesting things we're going to link to and highlight, so check that out if you can. Also, all the previous episodes are online as well. You can digest at your whenever you want. Right.
I think you ought to just say something about where we are, because there's odd noises going on.
Yeah, it's a bit busy. We're in a glass box.
It's a very nice box.
It's not an experiment or anything.
Yeah, people out there with clipboards or something on the back. We're downstairs in my office in Liverpool, the Plaza. We've got a little meeting room on the go here, because Emma, who I share an office with, she was busy upstairs. She'll be typing away and answering phones and all that. Things that people that do PR do, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
You've got your Bentley parked outside there. <I'm sure>. Nice alloys on that bad boy, I like it. Yeah,
pretty cool. Mine's more like it's through the van, I think.
Yeah, that's more your style, isn't it?
I was just admiring the twining box of tea over there. I thought that was nice.
It's nice, isn't it?
Professional.
Nice touch. I haven't used one of these rooms before, but yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, it's nice.
And it stopped snowing for us, which is, I don't know if I'm happy or sad about, really.
Yeah, I'm sad. I like the snow.
I wouldn't have been here otherwise. I was planning on building a snowman this morning.
Yeah, that's good, man. Yeah, I woke up and the lads were looking out the window. First time Jacob's seen snow, really. He's pretty amazed. So, but I don't think it's going to come to anything, is it?
No.
Hey ho. All right, let's crack on. We're talking about nutrition this week and our relationship with food, which I'm sure we have touched on before in the past, Sean. In fact, we definitely have. But we've got an expert to join us today, Marissa. Your website, Marissa, is nourishing-roots.com.
Yes, roots as in R-O-U-T-E-S, sorry.
Yeah.
To kind of symbolise the journey that we're on with food rather than it just being kind of just about purely nutrition.
Yeah.
Because there's so many interesting complex factors about what we eat.
Definitely, it's fascinating. Everyone is an expert in food these days, aren't they? Because we're just bombarded with information. Do you want to give us a quick overview of your story and how you got to being where you are now? And you've got some pretty cool job titles and things.
I'll just give you a really quick overview. In the past, I had quite a negative relationship with food, where food just revolved around counting calories, looking at numbers, bags of packets, weighing food, and kind of viewing food as something that's always going to be bad for you, something you should try and avoid, or restrict an amount that's going to, control your weight.
Yep.
And I kind of grew up with that sense of food wasn't really nourishing my body in the way it probably should have been. But kind of, I followed my interests. I've always been interested in health and nutrition. So I followed that and went to university to study health sciences and nutrition. But being quite a perfectionist person, I kind of got led down a path of, trying to strive for the best grade, trying to strive for the best career, and kind of got up in this complex mix of negativity, really, like viewing food as this thing that we should control rigidly, and at the same time, your work should also be controlled so rigidly. And I wasn't really gaining any satisfaction from it at all. But it's only when I became interested in psychology, I started to really question my mindset And I've obviously had had treatment for my relationship with food in the past, but it's really through myself seeking at what else was out there to see, you know, well, is it really right that I'm striving for all these materialistic things? Is it going to bring me any real happiness? And food, is it actually satisfying me, you know, to restrict it in such a way? So to cut a long story short, I ended up doing a second degree, my master's in psychology, and through that developed this whole other interest in this mind-body relationship, health psychology, and how like our mind and body are so interlinked. Yeah. And it's not just about viewing food or any form of health, actually, in terms of these rigid numbers and rules that society tells us about. And similarly, like questioning these images that we get bombarded with every day to say, you should look X amount, you should look or weigh a certain amount.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, it was really revelational to think, wow, I've believed all of these messages, and actually none of them are really true or going to, you know, lead me anywhere in life or allow me to develop a deeper sense of meaning and achieve happiness in the sense of, you know, being able to contribute to society,
yeah,
help other people, feel grateful for the little things. So I'd say that was the start of my journey to, I would say, developing a very positive relationship with food. And it really kick-started my journey to recovery. And again, coming out of my recovery as well, in a positive way, I unfortunately learned that I had a dairy intolerance.
Blimey, double whammy.
I know. And I love dairy, I really did. I love my yogurts. I always had yogurts after meals. I love tea, so I always had it in tea. I've developed a bit of an addiction for coffee, so I've always had it in coffee. But finding out I had this allergy, which was affecting like the way I felt every day, and I had to find out a way I could cut something out of my diet without falling back into this system of rigidity, control, rules around food. I was a bit scared about that, to be honest. But eventually, when I did it in a way that involved replacing foods rather than eliminating it,
yep,
I decided to set myself a little bit of a research task and think, well, what are the benefits of cutting out dairy? How can I do it in a positive way? You know, I don't want to jump on this bandwagon of restriction again, because as you guys might know already, there's so many messages out there about dairy-free, gluten-free, calorie-free, everything. Yep. Every food has to be free of something for it to be sellable these days. But unfortunately, when I did my research, I started to come across things about animal ethics. And I honestly had never really considered it before in the way I was eating. Even in my 3 years of studying health and nutrition at university, animal ethics didn't really come into anything at all. But I did stumble across a few, I'll just say the word, horrific videos.
Yeah, they're the ones that I'm always too scared to watch.
They do put it on the line.
Yes.
And it's real. It's real.
It is. Yeah. I mean, I must admit, I've never actually watched one all the way through because I couldn't physically do it. But I did actually more research into the ethical and philosophical side and looked at this idea of, you know, how we can actually be compassionate individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that involved following a vegan lifestyle, which I'll go on to a little bit more later, as I'm sure podcast will go on.
Yeah, no rush. We've got loads of time here, haven't we?
Yeah. Hopefully. I'm so sorry I could blabber on for ages about this topic. But also, I mean, veganism isn't just about following a plant-based lifestyle. I mean, one, you can eat cake and all sorts of other things, but on the other hand, it's about developing this very positive relationship with other people, the whole planet.
Well, you use the word compassion,
mm-hmm,
and when you look at mindfulness and my whole philosophical route, it's based around compassion.
Yes.
I'm always getting on these podcasts about my philosophy is that if we all look after each other, we're all going to be okay.
Yes.
And that's fundamentally it. But the it's that I want to look after as well as the animals.
Yes.
So, because I think one of the things that we need to look at in this is that there's three of us sat around the mic here. You're vegan, I'm veggie, and it's omnivore, carnivore.
Pretty much.
And we all come to the way that we eat from different angles and for different reasons. And I think that's kind of interesting. Yeah. And it's like, how do we, each of us, kind of justify, I suppose, where we are. If you have to justify.
What do you, I can tell you're chomping at the bit, Sean. So, where's your relationship with food? Or how's it changed over the years? Because you've
been I was brought up in meat and two veg world, and then spent a lot of time vegetarian when I was studying all the Eastern stuff, and then came back and started eating Mother's Pride bacon sandwiches. And then I'm thinking, why am I doing this? And I had the opportunity to have a farm, and I decided, okay, I would face up to that issue. If you're going to eat meat, then you have to face up to what that means. And when you grow animals and kill animals to eat, and I went through that process of killing virtually everything.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go down to abattoirs, which you have to with some of the bigger animals, and then you see what goes on in the abattoir, which is the kind of films and stuff that you were talking about. My thing is that if anybody took a young calf into a restaurant and said, okay, this is for tea, who's going to kill it? Everybody would be up in arms and no one would do it. And that's the reality. If you're prepared to eat meat, from my point of view, you have to be prepared to do the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just go down to Tesco's and buy a box of dead body and that's okay.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's the kind of morality, if you like, the ethics, the compassion for me. It's not nice.
Yeah, there's a disconnect, isn't there, between all we...
Much of a detachment as well, like even from the way that we view food in general. Is it just a commodity that we just use as fuel?
Yeah.
We don't really... I mean, I think everybody knows what goes on, but not in a very conscious way that we think about.
But people will say, I'll eat a fish, but take the head off. I don't want to see its eyes.
Or a prawn. Take the head off the prawn.
Yeah,
true.
Because I don't want to associate with the fact that this thing was living.
Mm. Well, even food packaging, you know, there's an avoidance, like, in terms of what is put on the cover.
Yeah.
Like, you won't put a picture of a cow or a chicken on the front of a...
Yes.
You know, when you buy chicken
breast. But what about when you go past a butcher's and in the window there's a pig dressed up in butcher's clothes holding a chopper? You know,
as though it's really happy that it's...
Hey, come on.
Yeah, which bit do you want first? Yeah.
Or even, like, dairy, you know, like, if you go to somewhere that's selling ice cream, it's got a picture of a happy cow on it. And often that's not the case, but again, we live in a world of complete detachment. We don't look into, you know, where food comes from. We just want to know things about the calorie content and how it's going to nutrify the body, rather than how it's going to nourish us in both mind and body and help the planet and animals and other people.
Yeah, this is a real explosion in, well, the last 10-15 years of, and even the last couple of years, in terms of the quantified self, as they call it, in terms of what people know about themselves. You know, so even my mum's got a Fitbit she goes around with to track her steps, but then it'll tell you calories, which is a bit of a... But she's a calorie tracker, my mum. But I know if you link your Fitbit up to the app, and then you can, within the app, you can put your... Every time you eat something, you're encouraged to kind of log into the app, click plus, add whatever you had, and it will work out calories and all that, and then...
It's quite robotic, isn't it?
Give you feedback. Very robotic. There we go.
And if we're looking at food styles, how do you feel about... When you are eating meat, but how does that work for you?
Put me on the spot. I don't put too much thought in, to be honest, like, in terms of where it's come from, I guess. I guess my life's pretty manic, so it's like, just get it down. With my lads, I know with certain parents will shy away from telling their kids what's in food or what they're eating, whereas I'm really upfront with Will in terms of, you know, if he's eating chicken or... We had a Sunday roast last week, and it was beef at my mother-in-law's. It was amazing. And Will hasn't really liked beef that much in the past, but this time he loved it for some reason. So I was, like, telling him what it was, and I was like, you know, it's a cow, Will. And he's like, oh, right, really? And then the next day at his grand's, he was like, oh, I had cow for my lunch yesterday. So he's pretty cool that he didn't freak him out, which is quite interesting, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting he actually said the word cow, because, again, form of detachment, we rarely actually say the animal that something comes from. If it's a sausage, we don't say we're having pigs.
Right.
If it's even shoe leather, if we're having... It's leather, it's not cow skin or animal skin.
Yeah.
And to put that animal on it, it would probably put a lot of people off, or at least, like, make them think about buying it in the first place. But, again, going back to that detached world.
Yeah.
I was up in the lakes a couple of weeks ago, and it's lamb season, and all the little lambs are frisking around. And then we come back, and we've got Easter coming up now. Loads of people come to our house for Easter, and the food comes in sections. So there's the meat eaters, there's the vegetarians. So I now have a leg of lamb in the freezer, which I'll cook for these people to eat, but I won't eat it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm not a food fascist. I what people want to eat is up to them.
Yes.
And I don't mind cooking it, that's okay, but I want to make the disconnect between me and it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you see those little lambs frisking around, and then you relate that to this, you know, lump of stuff, lump of dead body in the freezer.
Yeah, it's interesting as well. We seem to have a better connection with animals when we see them as young, like a lamb or a cute little goat is, you know, is seen as more inedible than something like a cow or something that seems like you've put a negative label to. Because I think,
but it works the other way too. If when I was a kid in Meat Eater London, if you couldn't afford a lamb, you had mutton, which was a sheep that kind of died of old age or something.
Yes.
You know, so maybe there's negativity in the older animals.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, what have we got here? Yeah. What are the kind of indicators you look for? I mean, people these days are obsessed with, obviously, weight as one. BMI is a cool one. I know do you want to aim for that kind of 20%-ish mark personal training?
It's not necessarily an accurate indicator of health.
So yeah, exactly. Well, that's what I'm getting at.
Better,
these indicators that we're looking for, even things like blood sugar and what have you, how much do you value those numbers, or do you think they're not what we should really be looking for?
Well, firstly, I think they do have a place in health. I do think some of them do have a good physiological indicator of, you know, maybe how healthy you're internal body systems are working. But not only do we need to question the accuracy of them, such as even things like a calorie, like even the way those are calculated and actually mixed up in food, and being able to accurately calculate calories for the average individual without a calorie bomb to actually accurately measure, it's not realistic for the average person. But getting back to the main question of how much I value them, these measurements, is, in all honesty, not so much anymore. I mean, I used to value them immensely as what I based my life on, knowing how many calories I ate, how much exercise, what steps I'd done. But really, they're not the true indicators of well-being. They're one little part, but there's so many factors of a human being that involve health. So, for example, not many people count how many hugs they've had a day. Not many people count how many social interactions they've had.
It'd be interesting if you had a watch that had a hugometer or something.
Oh, no, if I put you listening, don't take my edit.
Frantically, you go to the App Store now, see.
Yeah.
I'm eating these wonderful nibbles while we're talking here.
Yeah, quick mention of this chocolate.
They're amazing.
Can I have a bit more? It's only my second one.
I might have another nibble too.
Go on.
Oh, thank you.
It's a little one for you. That's a bit rude. Left the time.
Oh, it's okay. It's the best one.
What have we got in this, by the way? This little chocolate treat.
Oh, that one is raw cacao, which is basically chocolate that's not been roasted.
Okay.
Added with some coconut palm sugar, which is so nice.
Mm.
Has a lovely flavour, and it's also got some dried mulberries, a little bit of almond butter, and some coconut shreds.
Mm.
And the little one is similar, but it's not got the chocolate in that one. That was some goji berries, dates. Oh, I love dates.
Yeah, I love dates.
Really like toffee.
And I only really got into dates like this Christmas.
Mm.
It's weird dating. Some things you only see at Christmas, don't you? And for me as a kid, for some reason there'd be a pack of dates on the like the fireplace or the hearth.
Yeah,
at
like
Christmas.
Fruit and nuts thing.
And I always avoided them as a kid. I tried one, finally.
Mm.
They're amazing. You can just tell by eating something sometimes. Even if it's sweet, you just know it's good for you.
It's amazing when you're in North Africa and they're just kind of growing on the trees in the streets.
It's beautiful.
Mm.
I think years ago they were actually known more like food of gods as well. And I know some religions, they break their fasting with dates.
Right.
But they're so sweet and it's so simple. You just can get a date, shove some peanut butter in, or almond butter, whatever things you like, some general nuts, and just eat it, and it's honestly so pleasurable.
They do these things in Dubai where you get a date that's been split open and stuffed and then dipped in chocolate.
Holy
carrot, those are amazing.
Oh, wow. Yeah, but they're really good. You could make I'm going to say it again, Make a Killing.
Yeah.
There's two kind of trendy sandwich bars just outside the window there, and they sell like, they could sell packs of those for like £1.50 easy. You'd clean
them. Definitely. I'd clean them all up. I'd hoover, like a little hoover when it comes to the especially things like, not that I'm not doing a promo for any food product here at all, but
yeah.
Sorry, Naked bars. They're so nice. They're not too expensive. Just get them, pop them in a bag, have them with a cup of tea at work. Have them in the afternoon as well, maybe. And just great to have a nibble on, and you just feel really energised after having them. You don't feel sluggish. I mean, have chocolate and sweets as well. I don't by any means restrict food intake, but they're just great for on the go. Really do taste nice.
Yeah, I guess one of the issues is, which we touched on, is kind of people are so aware of all this stuff now, which is good in one sense, because, well, the stuff that goes in our diet that we wouldn't have been aware of, like the amount of sugar that is put in sauces, which, you know, thankfully now people are starting to clock onto. But at the same time, it can be a bit of a burden, all this information, can't it?
It can be enlightening, though. You know, the Michael Mosley, it's a doctor.
Yes.
And, he was doing the Trust Me, I'm a Doctor series. And he took a drink that I use when I go for a run. I get this drink and just put it in my backpack and off I go. Halfway around, I'll drink it, glycogen. And he did a diagnosis and took it apart and said, what's in it? So it was water, 7 teaspoons of sugar, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, and a bit of flavouring. And that's all that was in it. And I was paying something like £1.50 a bottle for this. But that's all it was. And that's kind of useful information, really. And I suppose the first thing is, do I want to drink 7 teaspoons of sugar?
It's about that informed choice for the consumer, which again is really important. I think back to your question as well, Ed, is you know, are we viewing food as good and bad? Are these black and white terms now? You know, sugar's bad, then fat's bad, then salt's bad, and it's whatever's in the media, the hype.
Yeah.
Another book comes out, Fast 5-2 diet.
Recently, stuff like that, or recently it's kind of like, okay, all of a sudden margarine is really bad, but butter is good.
It used to be butter was bad and margarine.
And now there's things saying there's no link between saturated fats and kind of heart disease and stuff. Yeah. It's like, what?
Who's funding this research?
You have
to question, because a lot of it is by meat and dairy industry. Even when I've looked at myself, you think, oh, it's advertised by such and such, which actually linked to a dairy farm, a dairy, you know, dairy organisation. And also, when media latches onto a research article, they'll really, very rarely go into depth about how many people are in the study. It could be like 7 people.
Yep.
And it's not, you know, in any way a reflection of the whole society.
Yeah.
And all they're looking for is a media headline. They want to sell newspapers and they want to sell your health. They're not bothered about your health, really. They're just bothered about, you know, how much income they're going to get or recognition from selling a journal article or a paper.
Yep.
So if you're vegan, I'm veggie, and Ed's a meaty, then how are people that are listening to this, how do you think, because I guess some people would be thinking, what do I eat now then? So what kind of advice would you give people from the research you've done? How would people approach their idea of food? What would be good for them?
I think firstly it's developing, hopefully we can touch on this a little bit more later, but it's developing that compassionate relationship with yourself and food. So firstly, not looking at food as good or bad, but that there's loads of grey areas in between. And I know I follow a vegan lifestyle, and that is what I would advocate as like the best way to health. It's also about, you know, questioning, you know, it's actually okay to eat cake, it's okay to eat chocolate, and, you know, how can you best learn to fall back in love with food again? Not view it as something we should avoid or restrict. But how you can find ways of nourishing your body in ways that, one, satisfy you, ways that don't follow rigid diets, because, one, in 99% of cases, they don't work. But also following a diet that, you know, fits your lifestyle. It's not about calorie counting. It's about, you know, making social connections with people, taking time to prepare fresh food.
Yep.
And even when you can't, don't feel guilty about it, because it's part of everyday life that we do get caught up in things. We don't have time. Just say that's fine. You know, tomorrow I might cook a meal, I might not do.
Yeah.
But just aiming for that way of, you know, that when you eat something, you'll feel energised, nourished and happy. Mm-hmm. Pleasure isn't bad, but we're prescribed in society that pleasure is bad for us.
Yeah.
Whereas my perspective now is, no matter how many calories something contains, if it's a Mars bar or an avocado, I mean, I'd likely pick the avocado over the Mars bar because I know one, I love avocados, but if I had a vegan version of a Mars bar, which they do now and it's actually quite nice, I'd have the Mars bar.
A vegan Mars bar?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
So there's no dairy? No. I've actually just come back from Veg Fest in Brighton over the weekend, and I mean, loads of people who go there aren't vegan, and there's so many foods you can have. We have vegan fish and chips. Can't tell the difference. My partner, who's actually just gone vegan himself, he was so surprised at how much cake there was. I mean, hardly any of the foods are, how in inverted commas, health orientated.
Yeah.
It's more about a celebration of food, like any festival. Mm-hmm. And festivals are about enjoyment with family, friends, food, the activities. No one was counting calories there, or if they were, I'd imagine they had a much lesser enjoyable experience than everyone else did. Just getting in the moment and, you know, picking up foods off stores and going, oh, I'll try a little bit of that.
Oh, yeah, lovely. Pretty simple.
Yeah, so how many calories are in that?
If they were doing veg, fish and chips, mm-hmm. what was the fish bit? What was that made?
It was tofu, and it'd been flavoured with like a seaweed extract, which sounds horrible. Like, I am not a fish fan. I used to be. But I'm not, that kind of taste usually kind of puts me off things. It reminds me of raw fish.
Yeah.
But this, honestly, it tasted, it took me back to my childhood. And I grew up with my nan and granddad. So every weekend we would have fish and chips, and sometimes twice, with mushy peas and the works. And
good times,
it really
yeah.
took me back, because that was one thing I've always missed. I mean, even when I had a very restrictive relationship with food, fish and chips was something I would never allow myself to have. So this weekend, actually trying it, it really made me feel happy. And again, it's getting back to that point. Food is more than the nutrients it contains.
Yeah.
It's memories, relationships, happiness. It's very much connected to the psychological as well as our physical selves.
Yeah, big time. Yeah, it's like it can be a little time machine, food, can't it?
Yeah.
Or just trip. Well, I mean, yeah, just when we go on our holidays up to the northeast, Northumberland, there's certain things we have to do, like, just because I've done them every time we go. And one of them is there's a chip shop in the village, the village south of where we stay. And you've got to go. And we usually end up going like twice in a week, just because we're not going to go back for 6 months or something.
We had a real
but yeah, it brings back all those memories.
We were talking about what is it that you miss out of changing from meat to veggie diet, and we were saying nothing really. You know, flavours are better because you focus more on the flavours. And then both of us had this realisation that one of the things that we enjoyed when we were eating meat was duck in pancakes.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And part of it's the pancakes and the sauces and the veg and stuff like that. And then we went to a pub. We were going to a pub, and on the menu, it had crispy mushroom pancakes. Mm. And what it was mushroom that had been cooked, so it was like
the texture of the duck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I said, can I talk to the chef? And worked out how he did it. And we've been doing that since.
Don't speak to him.
No, she was okay.
Just thinking what Beth would do.
She wanted
to kick him off us.
No, it was good, yeah.
Very good.
And so so what will happen now is, because Robert will eat the duck, so he can have the duck and we can have the mushrooms and we can all sit down together.
Again, like making that accommodation for social needs.
Yeah, that idea you were talking about is it better to sit down and have a Mars bar, maybe a vegan Mars bar, mm-hmm. with a mate and have a social food rather than having an expert salad on your own somewhere?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We're also saying, like, counting things like the amount of time you spend with people and how food contributes to your actual well-being in a more holistic sense of it connects you with your memories, connects you with your family. And even on a vegan lifestyle, at first I was so scared that it would put me back in this place of restriction, cut me away from family and friends, I've been so surprised of how accommodating not only my family and friends have been, but how the lifestyle has helped me to connect with food in a much more positive way again.
Yeah.
Like now, before I never spent time in the kitchen, I had a fear of the kitchen. It sounds really sad, but I'd actually shake if I was preparing food. I'd think, oh my God, am I weighing it wrong? Am I calculating it wrong? And it was just big stress.
I mean,
it sounds silly. But now, I'm like, when can I next get in the kitchen? What shall I make? Trying to create a new recipe or looking for inspiration. And it's such a big joy in my life that if someone took that away now, I can't imagine my life without it. And as well, at the end product of sitting down with someone, whether it's my partner, my mum, a friend, and sharing that or sharing some snacks, that's what gives me pleasure in life. And that's how food now contributes in a way of having that positive relationship. And even in the terms of accepting my body, no matter what it looks like, no matter what food I put in that, I think it's all about this nourishment is not just nutrients. Nourishment is nourishment for the mind and the soul,
yeah.
Not just the physiological calories or the vitamins and minerals that go into the body.
I think there's a lot of love in breaking bread together.
Definitely.
Families coming together, friends coming together.
Big time, yeah.
And I think cooking is an expression of love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. Well, you look at the kind of the future of food, and just we'll start wrapping things up in a sec, but the typical science fiction movie will have this kind of not long from now, eating, like, just having a pill, like, pop a pill, and that will have all the nutrients in it. Some kind of grey, slimy sludge that, you know, we'll just kind of neck, and on we go to battle whichever robots are trying to kill us at that moment. But hopefully the future isn't like that, because, well, there are signs that there are certain kind of... Is it Soylent? That's sort of something that is one way. It's basically you can live off it now. It's just like a powder you get and you mix it with water and you neck it and you have it twice a day, and you know there's people living off it now.
So it gets away from the physiological aspect of actually chewing food though as well, which I'm a bit
you take the rubbish from that, and you don't exercise.
Yeah, I wouldn't need teeth anymore. How are we going to evolve?
What happened to knife and fork companies and spoons?
Oh, my gosh,
they're telling great people
they get plates.
Yeah. Cup industries will be normally.
Invest in cups.
You'll end up coming in plastic sachets.
Costa Coffee will be pleased and stuff, won't they? They'll have to just take food off the menu and imagine like little pills. Oh, this one's red, this one's blue, and that's the variety you get.
I know. Maybe, who knows, man. I'm sure it won't happen, but yeah, restaurants might be, I don't know.
Maybe they'll be social places rather than eating places.
Yeah.
But that element, I wonder whether getting into more drinking your meal would also encourage other behaviours that involve drinking, and drinking would become a bigger part of culture, connoisseurs and meal replacement connoisseurs and alcohol and cocktail making with these meal shakes. I'm sure the creative human mind will work in other ways that we've never explored before.
I got a Nutribullet because I quite like the smoothie. I'm looking on the internet and I thought, wonder whether you do alcoholic smoothies. And when you go into that, there's a whole industry in making alcoholic Nutribullets, like kind of cocktails. It's a whole world.
There's all sorts of interesting things you can put into cakes, which I may have experimented with in my university days to heighten the sensation, but we won't go into that too much. Or pizza as well.
Especially
tried that once.
Cakes,
yeah. All right, cool. Everyone happy? Anything else we need to mention?
I'm good. It's been really lovely to have you here, and things we've been talking about before we went on air and when we were on air. It's good.
Thank you.
So I hope you come back again.
I really hope so. I really enjoyed coming along, so thanks.
No, the pleasure. Thanks for coming in. We've mentioned your website, Nourishing Roots, as in nourishing-roots, routes.com. Mm-hmm. Anywhere else? I take it your Twitter and Facebook and all that lark.
Going back on food again, I'm a bit of an Instagram. I love Instagram, so I'm Nourishing Roots on there, which is nourishing_roots again, routes.
Yeah.
And there you can find out about my addiction for tea, exploring cafes, cooking really lovely vegan food, and just loving life, really. Getting back to that place where I feel happy in my own body, my mind, and with food.
So do you go for lots of different kinds of teas?
Yes. I must admit, I'm, as much as I love tea, I just love an English breakfast tea with some almond milk or soy milk, oat milk, anything. But recently I have started veering towards the coffee market too. A lot of specialty coffees out there. I love to find a good quirky cafe that's got a little vibe, you know, good atmosphere. You can hear the coffee machine roasting away. And that's my happy place, is find a lovely cafe. Can sit, relax, be mindful, just have a chill.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have become a bit of an explorer now. I think I'm going somewhere. I'm on TripAdvisor looking where I can find a really cool cafe.
Look in Liverpool, then. There's loads of cool little gaffes you can go to.
Yeah, like Cow & Co or Filter of Fox or a few good ones.
Yeah, I know there's a Bean Coffee over there, which they've got a few in Manchester. I learned an interesting thing about the coffee shop business recently. This is the coffee co that I used to go to where I go networking. They're just there's just the one shop for now, but there's another one opening nearby. I won't say the name, but they've got about 10 or 12 shops now, and they've grown rapidly. So I asked Josie, who runs the coffee co, about it, and apparently when a shop like that gets to 14 branches, they're allowed to be bought out by the likes of Starbucks and Costa.
Before that,
anything less than that, and they're not allowed to, because of... So what happens is a lot of companies will expand rapidly and then sell out to these
big
guys.
That's a shame.
So yeah.
It's like in Brighton, there's one, again, I won't mention the name, so lovely coffee last time I went there. Never had coffee like it was that good. Now I realise they've been taken over by Costa Coffee, and my friend who introduced me to it said, it's just not the same.
Yeah.
Just not the same.
Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. It's funny how coffee, I guess coffee and chocolate have that kind of effect on our neurology that does have a stimulant, but also has a huge comfort in it as well.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I stopped drinking coffee last year. I'm on decaf now, except for every now and again.
Oh, I see.
Because I was just playing with things, like trying to pick up my energy levels.
Yeah.
And I thought I'd become a bit kind of used to just having two cups of coffee a day, just without thinking about it. Mm. And I did notice that I was waking up feeling more sprightly after a couple of weeks. So I've kept it up. I do miss it, man. Yeah.
If you do decaf espresso, then you can do it. You can still get the pleasures without the hits of it.
Without the heart rate going.
Yeah. Have you ever tried anything called matcha tea?
Matcha tea?
Matcha tea. Mm-hmm. It's basically green tea, and it's ground up in such a concentration that it has all like these phytochemicals, and it's really nutritious. But it gives you that caffeine high, but without...
How do you spell it?
Oh, matcha, MATCHA. And I make it into a latte. In Brighton and Manchester, you can get matcha lattes now, which is kind of the new hip thing.
Yeah, right.
And it's like really foamy and creamy. You can get it with syrup in as well, you know. I'm sure that might eradicate some of the health benefits, but who cares? And I love that at the moment. In the morning, I will make myself a matcha tea. And actually in Japan, like, the matcha tea process is very ceremonial. So it gets me in a place of, you know, I've got to take time, I've got the little bamboo whisk to whisk it up. And I'll just sip my little tea and then have a matcha latte.
Even that, the ritual of doing something like the tea ceremonies, puts you in a frame of mind. Mm. And there's something about, you could go into a Costa Coffee and it's just like grabbing fuel.
Mm.
Yes.
Or you can go in and mindfully experience something with other people.
Mm.
And it's the thing with food about, do you just throw it down your neck rather than experiencing it? And the same with coffee, you know, do you roll it around your tongue and actually enjoy it, smell it?
My morning routine is basically now just like shouting at my 4-year-old, get dressed, Will, get off the iPad and get dressed. I haven't got time.
Give
him
a matcha tea.
I might get into that.
I wrote a blog recently about a blog post about the ritual of tea and how that can fit into like everyday lifestyles. It's just taking that little 10 minutes of time to, you know, just put the kettle on. It's calm. And like if someone's sad, for example, it's like, I don't know if it's a British thing, but go, come on, come in for a cup of tea, put the kettle on.
Yep.
Instantly you feel, oh, just relax now.
I'm just Googling matcha teas, and it goes from things like it's a ceremonial grade matcha tea.
That's the nicest one. It's very expensive, guys, though.
And lattes, smoothies.
Wow.
Yep.
Stick a link in the show notes, so we'll put this on the website.
I bought a blueberry flavoured one recently, and no word of a lie, with a bit of maple syrup. I use almond milk or oat milk heated up with a frother. And it tastes like blueberry muffins in a mug. And it's good.
Wow.
Nice dessert.
And of all the teas that I've done, though, over the years, different places in the world, the one I always go back to is when I feel like I want a special one is gunpowder.
Oh, the green tea, gunpowder green tea.
And the way it opens up, so you have whole leaves. And,
yes, it's beautiful.
And especially in a glass container, you can see it opening out. It's like flowers. And,
yeah.
It's amazing.
It's a whole level of appreciation, isn't it?
Yeah,
absolutely. Shoving a tea bag in a cup.
We could talk for hours about all this stuff. We've all got a resource of the week to talk about. Sean, you go first.
I'm going to go for the Deliciously Ella app.
Yep.
And it was Ree that introduced me to Deliciously Ella, and she does some amazing stuff. Ree's cooked some amazing recipes of hers, and I like her smoothie ideas and things like that. And then Jodie, who we know well.
We do.
She went to an Ella book signing.
Ah.
And lovely Jodie brought me back Ella's latest book with
Every Day.
Love to Sean. And so I've got a signed Ella book.
Ooh. Yeah. Impressive.
Is it good?
Yes. I must say, actually, I do love Deliciously Ella too, and she partly inspired me as well during my recovery to get away from this element of counting calories and all that malarkey. But my resource of the week is actually a book, and it's called Peaceful Warrior.
Warrior.
As in like it's a warrior. Yeah. And it's all about, there's a guy in it, his name's Dan, and you know, he's at university, he's striving to, you know, he's a gymnast, actually a professional gymnast, going to the Olympics, and has all these ideas in mind of what he wants to strive for, what he wants to achieve. But he meets this guy, he's a really kind of weird guy, he's like a Buddhist guy, but he works in a garage, you know, just fixing cars. And anyway, this guy teaches him just the simplicity of life, and it's such an emotionally empowering book. It's changed lives, and it definitely impacted mine, just the way of re-looking at life and realising we're all connected, and getting back to basics and learning to love yourself and all those elements that I really believe in kind of are in this book. And it's a really good one to start with if you're
Peaceful
really
Warrior.
Interested into that lifestyle. Yes.
Cool, brilliant. We'll chuck that in the show notes. Mine, as usual, isn't entirely related to what we've been talking about. It's just what I've been reading last week. But it's an article on waitbutwhy.com. It's one of my favourite websites. Quite long form blog posts. It's a 2-part blog post about artificial intelligence, which is part like, wow, what's coming in the next 40, 50 years when computers start to really pick up their intelligence and race past humans in terms of thought. And stuff related to nutrition in terms of how they'll be able to heal our bodies with like nanotechnology and all that.
Individualised nutrition.
Exactly, yeah, personalised medicine.
They're talking about personalised cancer treatments, aren't they?
Yeah.
Which are tailored specifically to you and your cancer.
So that stuff gets a mention in it. On the dark side of things is like when computers reach kind of super intelligence, which could be, most computer scientists think it will be within 50, 60 years. It's like when they race past us, there's some pretty dark kind of endings for humanity type thing.
Yeah, I do question, the further we get forward, are we actually taking a step backwards? Like, were we more happier when we were cavemen dudes? And
but
chilling,
I think,
by the fire. I was going to say with marshmallows, but I'm sure it worked. Sorry.
Yeah, but have a read of it, because I think it's something that people need to kind of start to be more aware of.
Yeah.
As computers take over more of our lives, most of which is cool. If you chat to Siri, I don't know if you're a Siri user and stuff.
Yeah,
but
I do. Yeah, she talks to me.
But yeah, when Siri starts to kind of realise what's going on in the world and maybe sees us humanity as a bit of an issue.
But it's crazy when you can just say, Siri, and she goes, hi, and you say, can you just remind me when I get to Sainsbury's to do so and so? And she says, fine. Then you go and say,
yes.
Yeah.
Remind me to bring the microphone
I've not
up.
I've seen that.
Which you forgot this morning, didn't you? Had to run back and get it.
Yeah, yeah, she should have too.
Siri should have been on the ball then. You forgot the microphone.
Yeah.
Anyway. Cool, all right. Riz, thanks so much for coming in and chatting to us.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for the tea.
Yeah, pleasure.
Always
no,
appreciate
thanks
it.
For the chockies. I'll put all the links to your website and your Twitter and Instagram on our website.
On the Facebook page as well.
And hopefully we'll see you again soon.
It's good.
Yeah, maybe get you back down here, right?
Definitely.
Next week we're talking about the word no. We've had a couple of... one, a listener has emailed in kind of encouraging us to do a discussion about how we can, well, become better at saying no to certain things, which is something
I'm not going to do it. No.
No, you're not. Well, just this. Say what? Yes, one last time. But then we've had this kind of viral Facebook post of late on Facebook page, which is all about.
What's it gone up to?
I think 15,000 reach or something crazy.
It's
something
growing.
It's growing. Wow. It's just spreading out there like a virus, but in a good way. Polite ways to say no. So that's something we can discuss next week. Yeah. Livingthepresent.co.uk for all the show notes and links from today. Everyone take care. Thanks again, Rissa.
Oh, thank you. See you guys.
Thanks. Bye.
See ya.